Salon at 615 presents best-selling authors free to the public through a unique partnership between Nashville Public Library, Humanities Tennessee, Parnassus Books, and the Nashville Public Library Foundation. This Salon at 615 was recorded live at the Nashville Public Library.
Oh, Robin.
Oh, it's good to be home.
Now, do we have to take these mics, or are we good here? I think we're good. I've been so nervous about this interview, Robin. I couldn't wait to see you,
really?
First and foremost.
It was a tough get. I know. It was a tough get.
I know there's a special place in your heart for Nashville, and I want you to know there's a special place in our hearts for Robin. So the fact that you are here with us tonight, I think everyone's just so pleased. Thank you so much for being here.
It is my privilege. Thank you.
Selfishly, I would like to take this whole time and chat with Robin with my questions. But we've also selected some of your questions. You probably have better questions than I do, so we'll get to those in just a few minutes. First of all, how are you?
I'm good.
You feeling good?
Yeah, I'm feeling great. I'm feeling really, really good. When you go through a bone marrow transplant like I did, you're an infant. And on Monday, I get my final round of booster shots.
So you're still, wow.
I'm really feeling great.
I hope everyone marks in their calendar September 20th because that's your birthday and that's your 2 years after receiving the marrow transplant for your sister.
Yes.
So we can't wait. We'll all have a party here in Nashville for you in your honor.
I'll be wearing pull-ups by then. I'm a big girl now, but I don't. Yeah.
It's been an amazing journey for you. I think back and I learned in school about the Tuskegee Airmen.
Yes,
but
dad.
I experienced and really got to know what these brave men and women did for our country through your dad. And we lost him in 2004.
Yes, in 2004. My father, when people ask me, and it was so great when the mayor was talking about being the daughter of an English teacher. My mother was an English teacher. She grew up in Akron, Ohio. She was the first in her family to go to college, Howard University, got a $100 scholarship from Scripps Howard, met my father there at Howard, and he, as a child growing up in New Jersey, would dream of being a pilot, and he would take a broomstick handle and would cut it off, and he'd be in his basement, and it was his throttle.
And
he dreamed of being a pilot, and he went on to be a Tuskegee Airman. And I am just so grateful for just the life lessons both of my parents taught me. And they were always the first to do this, the first to do that, but we didn't know that as their children.
Right.
They weren't up on a soapbox saying, we did this, we did that, but just by their sheer example. When people say to me that I'm a trailblazer, I'm like, no, really? My father was a trailblazer, my mother was a trailblazer, my ancestors were, and the least I could do, all I wanted to do was be, I'll be honest, in the beginning was a professional athlete.
Right.
But there's something called, what was that again? Oh, ability. that you have to have. But I didn't
quite
have it.
You're the third leading scorer at your school. You're in the Women's Hall of Fame sports.
I'm going there tomorrow.
Let's not discount it too much here.
Yeah, but that was my joy. And that's why I say it's so important to find your passion. And for me, it was athletics in the beginning. And it became journalism. And when your passion becomes your purpose, oh, wonderful things can happen, and that's what I'm so grateful for.
I really think I began to get to know you a little bit better after covering Katrina. I was down in New Orleans, and then on the way back, we actually made our way up the coastline and somehow ended up in this town, Pass Christian.
Mm-hmm.
And it was your hometown.
Yeah, still is.
It still is your hometown.
Right.
And I mention that because I'm leading up to this book and when you wrote this book, but there was the loss of your dad. There was the loss of Pass Christian and the rebirth of Pass Christian. There was the breast cancer diagnosis and then the MDS diagnosis. Mm-hmm. And then as you're about to go into treatment, you lose your beloved mom.
Yeah, that was hard.
And when you look at all that, is there a time you question your faith? Are you pushed to your limits so much?
I am a woman of faith. I really am, and as I wrote, there were times that I got angry with him, but he can take it. He can take it. And if you're angry or mad, it doesn't mean that you're any less faithful or any less of a believer. But yes, I was. There were many times through my journey, especially after going through breast cancer, and I thought, okay, it's great to be a messenger, and I got the message out that early detection can save your life.
Right.
And that's what had happened for me. And unfortunately, I fell into that small category of the treatment that saved my life, then put my life at even greater odds. And yes, there's a moment that you're like, oh, really? I have to go through this again? And I said, okay, I'm going to do it. And my mother said, as she always said, make your mess your message. You know, find the meaning behind it. That's not the tragedy. Every one of us, every single one of us has had something in our life. We've had loss. We've had these seemingly insurmountable challenges. And somehow we get through. Somehow we find a way, and I'm no different in that regard. And so I was very grateful that my mother taught me that, and that's why I entitled the book "Everybody's Got Something," because everybody's got something. This just happened to be mine, and I was so grateful that my mother taught me about that. That's not the tragedy. It's if you don't take the time to understand the meaning and the purpose, and to the greater good, and sharing it with others.
Yeah.
And I even when I landed. There were so many people who met me here at the airport, and they just shared their stories with me. And I just ate right down the street. What's the grocery? What is it?
Buckets.
Yeah. Oh gosh, that's why I'm a little right now.
Yeah, you're huge, Robin.
Yeah. I'm just saying. I had a great lunch. But just sharing the story, and I love that because everybody has something. We all have something to give and resources to share to help us through our something.
Yeah. How nice to see someone on the national stage that is not afraid to share their faith and show their faith on air, isn't it great?
Yeah, that's
just awesome.
Thank you.
It's so refreshing.
Thank you.
I sat down and I was looking at the cover of your book, and there's just a beautiful photo of you, and I look at Everybody's Got Something, and I almost think it's the answer to the question, why me, that we start asking when we go through a situation. And I wondered, first of all, why didn't it say, honey, everybody's...
Because that's what my mother, she would go, oh, honey, everybody's got something.
Right.
You know, when I was a little kid in the past, and I would go, somebody push me down, and I got my... And she'd go, oh, honey, everybody's got something. I go on and that. And it was true.
It.
What I mean, so I, and that's how I learned it from a very young age.
The book is your third, though, and this one gets very personal in many ways.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to me about the thought process about, I need to write this down. Is it the loss of your mom and wanting to remember everything about your mom? Was it the struggle going through MDS? When did you actually say, Robin, it's time to get this in the book?
Well, my favorite part of the book is the letter to my mom at the end.
Yeah.
And if you notice, she got the first word in and the last word in. She's the alpha and the omega. And I know she's smiling and going, yeah, that's of course. She still is getting the last word in, even now. And I didn't feel a need to write. I didn't even think I was going to write this book because when I was going through it this time, I was just trying to get through it. And when my mother passed, oh gosh, days before my transplant, and to give you a
in your arms.
Yeah, I had gone through the process of preparing myself for the transplant. And once you have the transplant, you go into isolation.
Yeah.
And I knew that I wouldn't be able to get to my mother. And she had a stroke in July before I was supposed to have my transplant in September. And Mama was rallying again, and she was doing well. But right before I was to have the transplant, and my sister Sally Ann, who thankfully was a perfect match, her stem cells were being harvested. So we were in New York. Her stem cells are being harvested. The storm hits down in there was another hurricane down on the Gulf Coast. My sister Dorothy was my mom's caretaker. My mother was home from the hospital at that point, and she called and said, Mama's taken the turn for the worse. And we got down there in time, and I had decided right then that I'm not going to leave because I can't leave because I don't know what's going to happen here, and I'm not going to go back in a few days and have the transplant, and if something happens, not be able to get home. And I'm telling you, Neil, I'm telling you, it was as if my mother, everybody left the house, and we said, we'll determine what we're going to, let's just take it day by day. You know, let's just breathe and take it day by day. And that night, I was with my mom and the only family member there with her in her bedroom. There was a caretaker that was there, too. And this young woman was talking about how in the middle of the night, my mother would become very lucid and share these great stories.
Yeah.
And just this woman was just, she was just enthralled with hearing all these stories that my mother would say. And this young woman said, Jeanette, she said, your mother wasn't sure if she was a good mother or not. She felt that she wasn't there enough. And again, my mother is just steps away from us in her bed. And, And I'm telling this woman just these wonderful stories about my mom. No, she didn't have cookies waiting for us when we got home.
Right.
But there are just wonderful things that she did for us. And it was as if my mother heard that and said, I can go. And she passed.
Wow.
She passed. It was just as soon as I finished saying those things, she passed. And I jump up, and she took her last breath. And to know that she was there when I took my first breath, and I was there when she took her last. And it was as if she was saying, I am going to go somewhere where I can take care of you. You don't have to worry about me, and I don't have to worry about you. And we had the homegoing service, and then I had the transplant. And this is why I say to everyone, and I feel that I am a walking, breathing symbol of this too shall pass, because, boy, I'm telling you, I was down on my knees. And it's very important for you all to also realize that I'm flattered that people say that I'm such a person of strength, that I do feel that I am a strong woman and that we're all a little bit stronger than we think we are. But there were days I was crying. There were days that I was down for the count. And you just have to, as my dear friend who I'm going to see tomorrow, Pat Summitt's birthday is tomorrow.
That's right.
Pat Summitt's birthday is tomorrow. And she would say, left foot, right foot, breathe. Just keep on moving. Just keep moving. Just shuffle your feet and keep moving.
And then she hit her whistle.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, Robin, you're not supposed to make an interview cry, so let's kind of tone down a little bit. But you've been so wonderful in sharing these things with us, watching you each morning. When you announced the bone marrow transplant and the marrow match, donations went up over 1,000%.
Yeah,
and that's got to feel good for you that something good is coming this outside of your personal growth.
Make your mess your message.
And
when I was leaving, coming here, was at the airport in New York, a gentleman going through security, he said that his daughter had just had a transplant and was doing well. And I was like, oh, that's great. And I said, well, did she have was it someone in her family was able to donate? And he said, no. That she had three siblings, and there is a myth that you feel that if you have a family member, they're going to be an automatic match. That only happens 30% of the time.
Wow.
So 70% of the time, you need someone on the registry. And he thanked me just this today, and he said, in part because we helped, and I said we, because it wasn't something I did. I just shared my story, but it was everybody out there who actually started having these drives and just putting more people on the registry.
It like it was yesterday.
And it's just wonderful to see. Even my school, Southeastern, they called it swabbing for Robin, because you swab the inside of your mouth to see if you're a donor.
You want to take some questions?
Let's do
it. Okay, these are questions that you guys wrote. I didn't have a chance to look
be
through
nice.
Here, so let's
you're Southern.
If I stop midway through and drop the card, you'll know why. How has your race and gender played a role in your success? This is from Jamia Naylor. She's 29, and she's an HR coordinator.
Oh, so how is my race and my gender? I'm asked that from time to time. Can I see? Where's your hand? I always like to address it. There you are. How are you, hon? You're just a little baby. How are you? People ask me that from time to time, and my response is not to try and be funny, but I've always been a black woman, so I don't know the difference.
Right.
I mean, I don't know how. When I was involved in sports, I felt my gender was something that really people were like, oh, and this was a time. Now it's commonplace to see a woman doing sports.
Right.
But when I came here to WSMV in 1986, I was the first woman to be on the air doing sports, and so it was more of a gender thing. I'm very grateful that my mother and father, I remember the first time I didn't get a job that I thought I should have right out of school, and I went running home, and I said to my mom and dad, I didn't get it because I'm a black woman. And my mother and father said, did you think maybe you're not good enough yet? Maybe that's why you didn't get it? And I was like, ooh, they're like, no, you're not going to do that. You're not going to use your race or your gender or any other thing, anything about you. Take personal responsibility and being the best person you can absolutely be. And that's how I've always approached things. But yes, I'd be less than truthful if I didn't say that there were obstacles I had to overcome where people felt a certain way. I remember my brother-in-law. There was one time when I left here from Nashville and I went to Atlanta, and I was a local reporter there, and someone did a story on me, and it was a very upbeat, story saying I was doing a great job, And the reporter referred to me as a twofer, that I was a double minority, that it was beneficial to my employer to hire me. I never heard this phrase before.
You want to
trade? I know. And I was kind of going along with her and going, oh, yeah, I guess I am. I guess they did hire me because I'm a black woman or whatnot. And the story got picked up by the Associated Press, and my brother-in-law read it down in New Orleans, and he picked up the phone and he said, if somebody wants to say that about you, let them. But you know how hard you've worked.
Yeah.
And so that's what I've always felt, that if I put in the work, that the good things will come.
And all we see now is talent, 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 right? Mm-hmm. This one, I think, is a younger fan. If you received your gold award in Girl Scouts, what was your project?
Who asked that? Where are you? Oh, look at that little girl.
Wow.
Are you, because did you see the in the inside cover when I'm the proud?
You write exactly like me, by the way.
I know.
My four-year-old questions it.
You cleaned up really well.
Right. Thanks, I appreciate it.
I'm a lifetime member of Girl Scouts. That much I do know. I even have my little card saying that. I knew that I was not destined for sales when I couldn't even sell my cookies. I was just, that's when you know, if you can't sell Girl Scout cookies, don't be in sales. And so I knew that I had to find another line of work.
I bet you could sell a few now.
I hope so. But I can't remember my particular project, but I was very happy to be a part of Girl Scouts.
I love this question. It's two parts. The second part is where I'm interested. How important is attitude and the quality of life, and what do you do when you feel fear?
Oh, good. Who asked that? That's really another good one. Oh, hi. I feel that attitude, more so than aptitude, determines your altitude. And, Lord, that must have been a good one, y'all. Did I put that in the book?
They're all through the book. I'm telling you, if you try to write them down, you'll have your own book.
I really feel that way. I really feel that you have to change the way you think in order to change the way you feel. I am just, sometimes I don't know that I'm not supposed to do something. I just have a real determination. I think part of it comes from playing sports. And you might lose the game, but it doesn't mean you're going to lose the championship or anything like that. So I really benefited from that. Fear. All it needs is the eye of a needle to get through, and it just takes over you, and it's paralyzing. How do I get through it? It's true. When fear knocks, let faith answer the door. When fear knocks, let faith answer the door. So when I am really fearful, I find those moral victories. For instance, when I was trying to advance to a bigger market, and I was very fearful of making those cold calls, picking up the phone and calling somebody and asking for a job, I would do it and get turned down, and instead of feeling defeated, I would feel, I did it. I called. No, I didn't get the job, but I actually, I attempted to do something today. I find that action takes away my fear. I'm more fearful when I'm in fear and you're paralyzed and you're just not doing anything. No, but if you just take some small action, it just chips away at the fear. But it's something to know that the President of the United States, everyone, we're all fearful at one point or another. And if you're just going to let it keep you on the sidelines, you're going to be there for a long time. So it's just facing the fear and going and doing it anyway. And what's the worst thing that's going to happen? When you're really fearful of something, you find out, and then you go ahead and you do it, and you realize, what was I?
Right.
Yeah.
So do you stay on the couch and let faith go answer the door? This is from Marianne Oglesby. Is there one particular point in time where you fully realize, hey, mama, you really knew what you were talking about?
Oh, where are you? Where are you? Yes. Oh, my goodness. And I'm glad my mother lived long enough for her to hear me tell her that. And it's so true. And I tell young people that all the time. My mother would say to me, my mother wanted to be the mother. She didn't want to be my best friend. And she turned out to be one of my best friends in time. And there were some really tough teenage years and those early years like that. But I'm so grateful that she heard me, and more importantly, she saw in me how much I appreciated it. And I was really glad that there was one time I was toward the latter part of her life, I had gone to this big fancy party, and there was the who's who. Oprah was there, Gail was there, and all these people were there. And it was at someone's home, and I was just kind of swiveling my head around, going, "How, you know, got all the way? You
right.
know, how did I?"
Right.
How,
they were all saying, "Robin Roberts is here."
I was like, "Don't even." Well, how did I get here? And what am I? And it was a fundraiser for something. And it was at someone's home, and all I remember is I came home. I called my mom, and I was crying, and I was saying, thank you. Thank you for teaching me. Thank you for making me feel the confidence and comfortable and just being a child of God and knowing right from wrong and being able to hold my head up and to be around anyone and treat everybody the same. And when I was saying that, I was like, golly, it was just being in their presence, but not overwhelmed by their presence, not thinking they're any better than anybody else. But I remember calling my mother, and I could just hear it in her voice, like, I told you. And there are some things that she did. She wanted me to go, and this is so, I remember she wanted me to go to a larger college. I had an opportunity to go to LSU and some other schools and some Ivy League schools, but I wanted to play basketball. So I went to Southeastern Louisiana University, and I love that school. But I just received an honorary doctorate there. I'm passionate about that school. But Mama told me that when I got older and I would, when I'm around people and talking about where, and they're talking about their schools, Vanderbilt and things like that, and she was right. It would be nice to then to say those things, but I think everything worked out all right. I think everything worked out.
Robin found her school driving back from another school.
That's true. It was a good fit.
And how are we doing on time? Are we okay, everyone? Are you? Okay?
Yeah, I'm good.
Okay.
I'm good.
That's what I should be asking. What is the one thing you own that you cannot live without?
That I own?
That you own.
Oh, you know, there's not anything material. The one thing I own that I cannot do without right now is good health. I mean, I own my health. I'm very, very, I mean, if you have that, you have everything.
What a great answer.
But I feel that way. And I did, believe me, when I got my first contract and thought I was all that in a bag of chips.
Right.
And oh, gosh. I'm
then you read the fine print.
Yeah,
right.
it's just not worth it. It's not worth it. And I've never been a materialistic type of person. Okay. I did buy my first big car here. I remember in Murfreesboro, and Rudy Kalis was my boss, and so I got this car, and I couldn't even drive it. I couldn't even get. It had like six gears in it or something, and I was going down the main drag in third gear.
Crash,
and
Robert.
Yeah, and he was. And that's when I knew that I'm just not destined for that kind of life.
I look at the question, I go, my K-cup maker. And then she says this is Robin Roberts here, everyone. What do you miss most about the South?
Oh.
Fellow Mississippian, Wendy Blackmore.
Where are you, Wendy? Hi.
Hi.
Oh, there is just something about the South. I love coming home. I really do. I miss the people more than anything. New York has adopted me and has been very good to me, and I'm very appreciative, and it's not how people perceive. Oh, I would be a good 25 pounds heavier after that lunch I had today, and I keep thinking of if I ate like that all the time. It's the smell, it's everything, it's just the pace. I just miss the kind of serenity of being here, of feeling grass underneath my feet and things like that. But I know that there's going to be a time that I am going to come back south. I am a girl raised in the South. I'm a true grit. Mm. I was born in Alabama, reared in Mississippi, you know, went to school in Louisiana, worked here in Tennessee, worked in Atlanta.
Georgia.
So I feel that I am. And I know that there's going to be one day, because I live and work in New York City now, and I work in Times Square. And sometimes I'm looking around, I'm like, Times Square? And good Lord willing, I'm going to be an old lady one day and going to be back down south, and there are going to be little kids around me, and I'm going to be saying, I work in New York City. Yeah, I did.
Oh, sure you did.
You did, old. Eat
sure
your,
you did.
Yeah, eat your jelly, old woman. I know I did. I work in New York City. That was something. My 1-2.
Yeah.
Good Lord willing.
Get that Stephen Athelos guy to move down here. Yeah. All right, what is your favorite? This is the last one, by the way, because we want to save time for you guys, too. So what is your favorite activity when you have free time?
Favorite activity? I knew I was forgetting to do something. Free time. That's what I was
Free time.
Free time.
Oh, I watched you this morning on TV in New York, and now I'm sitting next to you. I know you don't have much, but when you get a second, do you still play tennis at all or anything?
I don't play that much tennis. I'm really big into yoga right now, yoga, Pilates. When your life is so structured, like I am up at 3:45, the second alarm goes off at 4 o'clock, I'm picked up at 5 o'clock. Believe me, across the room so I have to get up and turn it off. It's so structured that for me, when I don't have to do anything, it's just, it's peaceful. That to me is the best. When I wake up and I know that I don't have to do anything, I'm going to do something, but I don't have to.
Yeah.
That's good living.
Robin, you represent everything to me that's good in the broadcast business.
Thank you.
I always know the best broadcasters are the ones that are the same in person that you see on TV each and every day. So I want to thank you for that. I want to thank you for your time tonight, and thank you for being with us here in Nashville.
Thank you. And I want to say something, too. Please, for Neil.
No, for Neil.
I'm looking forward to spending a little time with everybody as much as possible, and I just want to say thank you. The main reason I make time like this is to say I appreciate the prayers. I know that many people lifted me up in prayer, my family, and I felt each and every one of them. I am very grateful, and I return it to you tenfold. Mm. And you have been just tremendous to my family, to Good Morning America. We've been number one for 2 years now, and it's nothing that we've done. It's you, and we don't take it for granted. And another thing my mom said, when you strut, you stumble. We don't strut. When you strut, you stumble. So we're just very humble and very grateful. And
once again,
nice to be back home.
Once again, she gets the last word in, Robin.
Mom does. She gets the last word
Robin
again.
Robin Roberts.
Thank you, everybody.